Welcome to the Ayahuasca Parents Podcast.
I like it every time.
I know, and every time I just think it's adorable. I know. It's going to take us a few times more before I stop commenting on, you know, how cute she is.
How cute our kid is. Yeah.
Yep.
I can tell you that.
Yeah. How are you, Mr. Joel?
Well, I'm sore.
Yeah. You're doing a 30-day 100 push-up challenge with our 13-year-old.
Thanks to the 13-year-old, yeah. And apparently I'm out of shape.
You're sore, really sore.
Kind of fat. It's become pretty obvious when you can't, like, lift your coffee cup up to your face.
When you can't brush the hair out of your eyes.
Yeah, right.
Only kidding.
Feel, you know, like I had a really good night's sleep.
That's good. Why is that?
Well, we saw this little documentary. I don't even know what it was called. Earthing or something?
Yeah, The Earthing Movie.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, we've done this a million times, you know, watch a documentary, whatever, and immediately buy their shit.
Well, for the record, I came across Grounding and Earthing like 5 years ago.
Right.
And at the time, there was a documentary called Grounding. And it was pretty good.
It was pretty good. Yeah.
Kind of woo-woo, little woo-woo. There wasn't a lot of science, again, to back up what anybody was claiming.
Yeah.
And anyway, so this documentary has more science behind it. It makes a lot of sense. And it was, you know, I put together a grounding mat, I don't know, 3 years ago.
Right.
Outside on a concrete pad. And I used to, you know, go outside, look at the stars, sit on the grounding mat, drink tea. It was very, you know, grounding.
Yeah.
And anyways, and then, so I just recently watched this, the Earthing movie. I think it's real or new, not real. Of course it's real. It's new. And anyway, so we decided to go ahead and buy an earthing sheet, which was, I think, about $150.
Yep, for a king size bed.
Yep. And it has it's a sheet that uses silver thread.
Right.
In a grid like pattern over the entire thing. And then it plugs in. So there's like a snap where the wire itself snaps into the sheet, which is supposed to ground all of the,
well, then you plug
the silver
it into
threads.
Yep,
and then you plug it into the outlet in the grounding
hole.
Hole, yeah.
Not the little slits.
Yep.
And then my cute little mind was like, well, we need to get like...
Joel had to prove it.
Yeah, so I had to get a little meter.
Yep, so
I don't know what it's called, but I have one.
Like a voltmeter or something?
Yeah, a voltmeter.
Yeah.
And, you know, tested ourselves. So I was 7 volts.
Yeah, so we had to the one thing I was thinking about this morning, though, is that we were near the grounding sheet. So it would be interesting to go like into the family room or the kitchen and see what our volts are. And because we're bioelectrical beings. And so when you move around, you know, you're going to conduct more electricity. So depending on if Joel was moving or not moving.
Also depends on what I'm standing by, because if you're standing by a TV or a computer, you absorb.
Yeah. The electromagnetic frequencies.
Or the Wi-Fi.
Which, if you're still in denial about frequency, I don't know what to tell you. You are frequency.
Well, here's what I saw. I was 7 volts standing next to the bed, and I was like 0.02 sitting in the bed.
I know, instantly.
Instantly. So it shows me that it works.
I know, you got this big grin on your face. For like 30 minutes last night, he was researching.
Well, we bought some weird shit that I can't tell if it works, and it feels like it works. But
that's part of the fun process of experiencing things ourselves, though, is this ability to... Well, and the means to be able to buy what we want to buy, to test it out, to try it out ourselves.
Yeah.
So how'd you sleep last night?
Awesome.
How's your inflammation in that
varicose vein?
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't going to out you.
Like, you can sidestep it. No, I have a varicose vein that swells up and hurts and sometimes. And I think it was, I know it was not swollen at all. Like, and it's usually swollen in the morning because you're laying down all night. So it's like your legs, blood goes to your legs. I don't know. I'm not a scientist, but
Probably in your case, pools.
Right.
Because that's why the vein has done what it's done.
Yeah, no, and it wasn't even bulging or anything. So I'm like, okay, all right. I mean, there's some interesting things, interesting claims by people that have been sleeping on the earthing sheets from more sources than the movie. People that are like, no, I bought a sheet and, you know, one lady's like, over, you know, a few months, I lost 50 pounds.
Yeah.
Which, you know, fat's inflammation. So she's like, I didn't change anything in my diet. I just lost 50 pounds. I'm like, well, I could lose some poundage. That would be okay. I think more where you hooked me, where you're like, I think this would help your varicose vein. I'm like, shit, I'll try it. Let's do it. $180 or $50, whatever it was. I'm like, let's try it. That's worth the try because nothing else has worked.
Yeah.
And I haven't wanted to get surgery. So.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and the liniments aren't, you know, they don't work. I mean, like you can, you can ingest a ton of antioxidants. But again, our beans are much more than just a biological bean. You know, we are atoms, really. We're 100 trillion atoms in each one of our cells and 60 to 80 trillion cells birthing and dying simultaneously throughout the day.
Cells made up of atoms, atoms separated by space. That space is electromagnetic energy.
Yeah. So when you really look at it and you look at that, we're protons, electrons, and neutrons, and then the integration, the plug and play of how is that going to help my physical being?
Yeah.
And they made some really great, you know, they made some, it's just common sense. Electrons come from the sun. The earth absorbs those electrons. And we're disconnected from the earth because most of us aren't taking our shoes and socks off ever. And or walking around outside.
Well, I can say day one, I'm sold. Yeah. So I can't wait to be week one, month one, and see where we're at.
Yeah.
You know, I can see that that if it works the way I think it's going to work, it's going to, I guess we're going to have to buy everybody grounding sheets.
Yep. Well, yeah. I mean, it was just,
can't let mom and dad live their best life with, like, hey, kids.
Well, we have very grounded children. Like, our youngest two are constantly outside. In fact, our 13-year-old, oh my gosh, like,
you know, his voltage on his bean.
Yeah, was 4.
Half of mine.
Yeah. And his dipped well below, I mean, to almost 0.
Almost to 0.
Yeah. I thought that was fascinating that we should do Lex too and just see.
I would assume it's the same. They both have really, they're both very lean with not a lot of body fat, very solid
super,
kids.
Super, super athletic and super, super healthy.
So the fatter you are, the more it's inflammation, which means you have more energy being stored that needs to be grounded out of your body. I should have read it when I got up this morning.
Well, it's just an imbalance of your protons, electrons, and neutrons.
That's why I love you. You throw the science spin on it.
Well, I'm an amateur in all the sciences, but I do love to learn.
Yeah.
And I do find it fascinating when, you know, things connect. I think our dog is trying to try and figure out how to make an escape.
Yeah, you might have to fix that door.
he's like, wait a second. I think that crack might be big enough for me to run out of. He's like, Mom and Dad have me trapped in the office.
All right. Well, so that's your morning science segment.
You're welcome for random bits of information. We plan to start off all of our podcasts this way.
Yeah. And, I think if all we're doing is we're sitting around waiting for Western science, Western medicine to tell us what to do, look how that's gone for the last 100 years.
Well, humanity's never been so sick.
Right. So I'm open to anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, just one more second, it felt good.
Yeah.
You were sleeping in a second. Helps with sleep. Anxiety, depression. I mean, it's weight loss. And I know, it doesn't make sense.
Well, for the longest
people
time,
people don't understand we're batteries.
And that's exactly what we are, as is just about everything on planet Earth.
Right.
Bioelectrical beings. I mean, again, like you produce energy. I mean, this isn't woo-woo. This is just science, like real science.
No, and it's, I feel really good. So yeah. I was so excited to go to sleep last night.
I know I was too. Well, and I felt so like warm and just like, I don't know, safe.
Yeah.
That's the only word that comes to mind is I felt really safe last night. Safe enough to go to bed at 10.
I go back to the naysayers that are like, it's probably just placebo. And I'm like, I don't care. Give me all the placebos you can that'll help me sleep better and wake up not inflamed. And
Placebo in and of itself is so fascinating scientifically because it really shares with everyone the power of the mind over matter. Like, think about that cliche, mind over matter. What does that mean exactly? I know. I love it how usually allopathic defenders, you know, we'll use the placebo. Well, it's just placebo. It's like, I'm just going to let you think about that for a second. But their minds don't work that way. They're not designed to critically think for themselves and question everything. And I just don't understand why everybody's so afraid to question everything.
Well, somebody made them afraid to question everything. The information keepers, if you will. Somebody did. It doesn't make any sense. Everyone that speaks up, everyone that speaks loud, that hasn't gone the normal, I guess, approved route of education or whatever, they get shunned. No matter what.
Yeah.
You know, because they don't want you to deviate from the script, right?
This is where the amateur scientists, I thoroughly enjoy, you know, like Paul Stamets.
Yeah.
Because they could draw outside the lines. You know, with an educational program, any of us that have been to college know you're given a curriculum and a book. And and then it's followed to the T. And they keep you so busy and so inundated with tests and quizzes and studying the material, memorizing the material, that you don't really have the time to tangent and to, you know, let your curiosities drive you in a different manner, like to research certain
aspects. Is regimented too, so it's controlled and
it's timed. Everything is very much timed. You know, you have 4.5 months basically to learn the textbook material so that you can test that you understand the material. And one of the things about like Randall Carlyle or Paul Stamets or Nassim Harriman, you know, not that they don't have an education, a traditional education, but that at some point in that education or, you know, post-education as they were, you know, experiencing things for themselves in their own fields, they let their curiosities drive them and they researched more and they were brave enough to go down the rabbit holes that mainstream science doesn't want you to look at because mainstream science suffers from this weird cognitive bias.
Well, and you can't have a discovery unless that discovery is approved.
Well, and
everybody else has to double check your numbers. But to be honest with you, when you listen to some of these guys that tried to go through the proper channels, and nobody would, you know, they would fail in their peer review, but they didn't let it stop them and they kept pushing forward, you know, then, you know, like you take like the maps.org, not to segue into plant medicines, but you take maps.org and that group of PhDs, you take a guy like Paul Stamets, who's like a mushroom expert. Right. These people are like, no, we're going to just keep doing it. At some point you'll catch up.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to make us, you know, be a square block in your circle peg hole or whatever. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a page from your analogy book.
How I mutilate cliches.
Right. Right. No, they were like, I'm just going to do me and I'm just going to report what I find. And I don't give a shit about being accredited by you.
Yeah, at some point, education trumped experience. And that blows my fucking mind when I think about it because most scientific experiments are based off of anecdotal evidence or observation of anecdotal evidence.
Well, according to your friend, too, like when they're doing research on something, they're already given the parameters under which they can do their research. And so, you know, they're not allowed to look outside the box. And sometimes looking slightly outside the box or expanding those parameters a hair, whatever it might be.
Right.
Greatly affects the results.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like this is a complete tangent from what we're going to talk about today, but why not? Right.
Sure.
So let's go down that rabbit hole. So there was a famous egg study that was done. And the hypothesis was that, well, eggs spike cholesterol. in the blood. So there was some independent, there's a big group of independent kind of moms and dads that have chronically ill, sick children that have banded together, and they pay scientists to do case studies to find out what the truth is. Mm-hmm. Because they learned through experience that, you know, a lot of the case studies that are done are bought and paid for, and things can be tweaked so you can get a specific result. So what they did is they, you know, had someone eat an egg meal, and then they started testing the blood, you know. So I think it was like a minute after, and then it was like a minute after, and then 5 minutes, and then 10 minutes, and so forth. Mm-hmm. Well, what they found is that, yeah, absolutely, you eat eggs and the cholesterol in the blood's going to spike. Okay. It's sort of common sense, really, because of the amount of cholesterol that's inside of an egg. Well, the egg industry didn't like this study. So what do? They have a big,
Their own study financed and funded by them.
That's right. And they sit down with a bunch of scientists and they show them the conclusion of this case study. And they said, well, how can we show that eggs don't spike cholesterol in the blood? Well, so they put together their own study. Someone ate an egg meal and then they waited 4 hours and tested the blood. Well, it showed no spike in the blood cholesterol. The
spike had come and gone at that point.
Well, yeah. But then they were able to then say to the FDA, we conducted our own study and it showed no spike in the blood cholesterol. And that was true.
Yeah. And that's what goes on.
Right. And so then they were able to advertise that it doesn't create, according to their study, it doesn't create spike in blood cholesterol.
Yeah.
And this happens all the time in nutritional science. It's ridiculous.
Well, nutritional science, paleontology, like other.
Oh, physics. Everything. I
mean, yeah.
Yeah. History. I mean, like.
Yeah.
You name it, you're always going to have like it's so strange. It's like the people that get the most airtime of being the scientists, right, that most everyone will listen to, those are the ones that are bound and determined to keep society where it's at. No growth, no evolution. We're not going to think outside of, and it's like a religion.
Yeah.
You know, specifically like in the history world, it's ridiculous how, you know, it's like, nope. We found and discovered everything. We know exactly how it all has played out and worked. And if you're outside that box, then you're a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah. Anybody needs proof of this. All you got to, like, the pyramids are the perfect proof, right?
Yeah.
They're 1,500 years old. They maintained that for like 40 years. Okay, they're 2,500. Okay, they're 3,000. Well, okay, they might be 12,500. Well, okay.
Yeah.
You know, whereas the guys that were like, no, those things are at least 12,500 years old have been saying that for 50 years.
Yeah, and I think a part of our cognitive bias is that instead of educating ourselves, everyone educating themselves to understand the data and how people have come up with the data. What a lot of really unintelligent, I think really kind of like the uneducated population has done is sought after a credible source. Like what?
The funny part about the credible source, when you really look into their sources, is it's like you being my source. Right. Well, my sources tell me.
I trust Cammie.
Yeah.
I trust Cammie. So we're going to just.
Their sources are their friends.
Yeah. And one of the things I want to be clear about when we're talking about things in our podcast, like don't believe us. Like you do the research.
Nobody should believe. I mean, my motto is you observe it until you experience it yourself.
Right. And that's the important thing. Mm-hmm. Experience.
I mean,
don't tell me you Googled something. Don't do that. Yeah. Like you have to experience it for yourself. You want to come at, you know, earthing sheets because you read a credible source or an article written by a credible source. Like, man, I don't.
Yeah. I mean, there's some scientists out there that are like, nah, it's bullshit. Cause I read those too when I was like researching it and trying to figure it out. Right.
Well, to say it's bullshit is to literally say that you're not made of atoms.
Well, yeah.
Like, yeah. And that has nothing to do with your biological being.
They didn't even say why.
But that's the thing is that's what they bank on is that's what's happened over time is that these credible sources now can just say that's bullshit. And if you believe this, then you're a conspiracy theorist. And these people that think that they're educated believe it hook, line, and sinker without even questioning, well, why? You know, where's the where's the constructive criticism and questioning?
So when you're doing your own research, you first, you know, you got to break it down. And the reason you have to break it down is because all these scientists are compartmentalized. Mm-hmm. So you got one guy that's like, nah, it's bullshit. There's no science to it. And he doesn't give a good reason. Okay. Well, so you take different data points, right? One data point is too much electromagnetism in your body, if I said that word right, causes inflammation. Just break that one down. Okay. So you can find a source that confirms that. A government source, if that's what you need to find. You can find one of those.
Yeah.
You can find another source that says inflammation is the leading cause of all disease. Well, I should be able to put A and B together, right? So,
right.
You know, so if electromagnetism causes inflammation and grounding yourself moves the voltage out of your body, that should decrease your inflammation. If too much inflammation causes disease, that should reduce your risk of disease.
Well, yeah. I mean, all disease really, we talked about this yesterday too, is, you know, inflammation or, you know, your body's trying to detox.
Yeah.
It's just that diseases have been branded. That's why a lot of naturopaths and homeopaths, when they start talking about natural, you know, remedies, they actually can't say the cancer word because that's a branded disease. And if you don't know about branding, like think about that. It's branded disease.
Right.
Because what it really is, when you look at, you know, why the body expresses cancer on the body, there's a lot of reasons why, but a lot of it's inflammation, lymphatic congestion. You know, I mean, at least my research has taught me a lot about the lymphatic system. I tell you what, like, I mean, again, I haven't had a cold in 5 years.
Yeah, neither have I. I mean, I've little things, you know, that I would call detoxing.
Yeah.
And it usually comes after eating bad.
It's always after eating, like sugar.
Yeah, sugar.
Yeah, this time of year, we try really, really hard not to eat a ton of sugar.
Yeah.
It's really difficult because of everything that's floating around, you know, but, you know, are people getting their flu shots? So they're shedding and it's just important just to, you know, try and arm our immune systems the best that we can.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't trigger anybody by saying that. Nah. I don't give a fuck.
It's just a conversation.
Be triggered. It says, I mean, more about you than me.
Yeah. I was like, at the end of the day, like when you're curious about these things, look into it. Yeah. You don't want to look into it and you want to go with the script that's been handed to you. Okay. Go for it.
Yep, right away.
And if your body is super healthy and you feel great, you feel fantastic, okay, it's working for you. There is a minority of people where the American diet isn't even harming them, not even a little bit, but that's not me.
Yeah, well, and you can't keep that up. I mean, like when you really think about the standard American diet, yeah, I mean, that's a fun way to eat. It's not very environmentally conscientious. It's, you know, or physically conscientious. If you've made that work for you and you don't have any issues, good for you, but at some point you will.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of time.
It'll catch up.
Yeah. But, yeah. Okay. Well, that was a nice little tangent.
I approach these podcasts like, let's just sit down and have a conversation.
Yeah. Word.
You know, and we'll talk about plants eventually, you know, so.
Yeah.
I think since we're kind of starting out and kind of introducing ourselves to the world, we should start out today with you talking about your childhood and what led up to you basically a breaking point where you were like, I don't care what I try, I'll try anything, or I'm gonna kill myself.
Yep, because that's the reality of it.
Yeah, so.
Yep, so I'm the second of five kids. So I have an older sister who's 3 years older than me. And then I have two younger brothers and a younger sister. And, you know, of course, everything started off with a mom and a dad.
Mm-hmm.
I always hitch a little bit about going into this because it's deep and dark. So, brief synopsis. I was basically tortured as a child from the time that I was an infant. My mom is the one that told me that she started kind of smacking me around about 3 months old. She got pregnant within the first 3 months of me being born with my younger brother. She said that she was sick a lot with morning sickness. And, you know, like all moms that struggle with morning sickness, they smack around their babies.
Totally normal.
Yeah. FYI, this is heavy stuff. And the way that I deal with heavy stuff is through humor and sarcasm. So not trying to be offensive to anyone else that's gone through this. That's just sort of one of the ways in which that I can deliver it without, you know, crying.
Well, yeah, but, you know, it kind of breaks it up, too. You know, you can kind of deliver some harsh details and then, you know, I think throwing humor at it is a good way because the message needs to come across. Like, look, this is where I started.
Well, there's so many people that have suffered this way. And well, and here's the deal.
Seems like our generation of parents.
Yeah. Yeah. The boomers.
The boomers.
Okay, boomer.
Yeah. Those boomers are assholes.
Yeah, but not all of them. I mean, we have met all kinds of, you know, individuals. I mean, it's, I don't really like to throw a blanket over one generation or another, but, you know, it really does seem to be, and let's be honest, I mean, for them to have beaten, abused us like our parents have with us, you know, they had to have been beaten and abused as well, horribly. And most likely even more severely than what they projected onto us kids. But so I was neglected as well. I mean, I walked at 6 months. In one of my ayahuasca experiences, it was pretty clear that the reason why I was walking at 6 months wasn't because I am extraordinarily, you know, physically blessed, but out of just necessity.
Take care of yourself.
Yeah, I really needed to learn how to move and move quickly. My older sister, who was 3 years older than me, did a lot of, from what my mom told me, you know, hugging and holding me. My mom would shove me as an infant into my my older sister's arms, kind of like, you know, take care of her. And I have a very interesting relationship with my sister because of that. Like, I actually feel more bonded to her as a mom figure than my own mom, clearly.
Yeah.
Anyways, so, we were literally tortured in every way, medically neglected, object raped. The emotional and mental abuse was extraordinary. When I was 16, my, parents pumped a chemical called sodium amytal in my veins. I mean, like, my childhood was just ridiculous.
For people don't know, that's supposedly a truth serum.
Yeah. For prisoners of war. But my mom
somehow
was,
they took you to the hospital, convinced the
they had me doctor. Lie. They had me lie to a psychiatrist that I didn't remember my childhood. And I don't understand, you know, this guy's got a PhD, why he would look at a 16-year-old and go, oh, okay, well, since you don't know, remember your childhood, then we're going to give you an intravenous drug that's going to completely obliterate your nervous system. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. During your puberty years and, see what we can find, you know? And so, basically, it's like a hypnotic drug is what it was. And yeah, my mom had been convinced that she'd been satanically sexually molested when she was a child, made to do all sorts of horrible sacrifice. This is what I was being told as a 12-year-old. And by the time I was 16, actually, I wasn't quite 16. She was certain that I had been molested and satanically sexually abused by her dad. And this is why she wanted me to do the sodium amytal. When I wasn't being beaten or abused, you know, my siblings were. And so if I wasn't being abused myself, then I was watching them get hit and smacked and kicked or thrown downstairs. I mean, the severity was awful. In fact, years ago, as I was going through my own healing process, I was trying to determine like how many instances of violence had I been through before the age of 12.
Yeah.
And it was like something like giving my mom the benefit of the doubt that she only hit us, you know, like once every other day, which, you know, is not likely. It was more like every day. That was like 2,160 instances of trauma by the time I was 12.
Yeah.
Started thinking about suicide when I was 9.
Yeah, it's normal.
Yeah, right. And really actually very fascinated. If you talk to anybody that knew me, I was a very kind of morbid child, very fixated mm-hmm. on death. But I faced death every day. You know, a lot of people, they're afraid of death. That was something I grew up with. Like, I just assumed at some point my mom would go too far and I'd die.
You know, it's funny is when you tell the story, when you told the story, you know, to me, like, years and years ago, and I was like, seems a little dramatic.
Yeah.
And then when I was hanging out with your brother.
Right.
It's actually sugar-coated.
Right.
It's actually hard to believe that it's actually worse than your description.
Well, so let's talk about that for a second. You know, I knew at a very young age I did not want to be a statistic.
Yeah.
And I very much was aware that I should be, you know, a prostitute. I should be addicted to drugs, you know, alcohol. I should be a train wreck of a human being, you know, that basically, you know, I should, you know, be dead or, mm-hmm. you know, that I'd be a train wreck and then I'd die.
Yeah.
And so I sort of adopted this, well, I'm not a victim, I'm a survivor. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really talk about it. I'd be like, yeah, childhood was rough, you know, and that was a complete, you know, understatement.
Yeah.
And so I talk about it in a general way, but if I were to get specific, and sometimes, you know, people are like, well, specifically, like, tell me a story and I'll tell them one story and they'll be like, I don't want to hear anymore. It's like, yeah, it was pretty bad. And yeah, the thing is
the story where your mom was grabbing you all by the hair and chucking you down the stairs.
Yeah, one by
you,
one.
When
yeah.
you told me that, and you're like, there's basically a pile of bodies at the bottom of the stairs. I was like, yeah, the fuck out of here.
Yeah, that's arms and legs.
That's got to be an exaggeration. Because again, it's just so awful.
Brutal.
And then when Kathan told me the story, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's actually worse.
Yeah. And I was always a spicy little thing. And so
yeah.
a lot of what I did was I took a lot of beatings for my brothers and sisters. When my mom would go after one of them, especially when they were my littler siblings, I'd provoke my mom. And at some point she'd turn on me.
Yeah.
But when I got older, she kind of figured out, I think, quickly what I was doing. And then it was like, oh, you don't like it when I beat your younger siblings? Well, watch me beat them now. You know, like I'm now going to, yeah. And so there was all kinds of ridiculous things. She let a bladder infection of mine go unattended for 3 weeks to a point where, you know, the doctor, you know, said, well, she's got so much scar tissue or she's built so much scar tissue that it's good that you brought her to the hospital when you did. Otherwise, she would have, you know, had to carry around a bag the rest of her life, you know.
Jesus.
Yeah. So, I mean, like. I can't even tell you how many times there were like life-threatening, very severe things that mm-hmm. she did to me, you know, and my siblings, and probably a lot of things that we don't remember, that we don't have any, you know, recollection of. Very mentally ill, really, I see it as brain damaged person. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And so, you know, by the time I was 16, I knew that something was really wrong with me. I just knew that I wasn't emotionally behaving or reacting like a lot of people. And I didn't see it until I started my healing journey that I was just disassociated. At a very young age, I learned how to disassociate. And a lot of the memories that I have, especially the really severe traumatic ones like being raped, I am looking at it from a third party perspective, which kind of creeps me out when I think about it sometimes, like, whoa, like at 3 years of age, I learned how to disassociate from my body to protect myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a lot of what post-traumatic stress disorder is. So if I had to diagnose myself by the time I was 9, I was suffering from PTSD, a severe case of PTSD. By the time I was 16, keep in mind that like there's an imprint that's being made on you. You know, you're in like this theta wave state from 0 to 7. And so that's basically like a hypnotic state. So all of these traumas that are happening are like shaping what I'm going to be like as an adult, you know, not to mention my brain is attempting to develop and then puberty hits, you know? And so you've got all these horns. So like I was brain damaged,
yeah,
you know, and super depressed. So I think I graduated high school when I was 17.
Well, and this wasn't just physical. Your mom fucked with you psychologically. Like,
yeah, I mean,
sometimes horrible worse. Things. Yeah, I mean, like from little things, from having you try on a swimsuit and telling you to tuck your fat in when you weren't fat, to
right,
you know, messing with you about the way you ate, to.
You know. Well, and the thing is, I wanted to point this out too. The interesting thing is that if you were someone looking from the outside into my family, my dad was a medical doctor and a very prestigious one in the community. He went to the Mayo Clinic, which is a very prestigious place to get your residency, was offered mm-hmm. a job there. You know, my parents seemed to be the pillar of an incredible examples in the community, but also in their church.
Your mom came from a very wealthy family.
Very wealthy family, very religious family, you know, and it's just funny when you look at, you know, the from an, the outside perspective.
I'm supposed to have a leg up.
Right. Outside perspective, you know, my parents were what everybody had hoped to be.
Yeah.
And yet we had this disgusting secret, or my mom had this disgusting secret and just tortured us. So,
yeah.
So I graduated when I was 17. I left my house when I was 17 and, I got married when I was 19, to a man that was shocker, just like my mom. So at the time I didn't see it, of course, but, I had two kids, 21, 23, and then I was divorced by the time I was 25. And it wasn't until I was 25, well, really and truly, like a lot of things kind of bubbled to the surface when I had my daughter. And I've read a lot of statistics or a lot of literature about this, about once you have your same-sex child, mm-hmm. If you've had childhood trauma, that sort of bubbles to the surface. So I'm like looking at my daughter Kai as a three-month-old, and she's just beautiful and perfect. And it was just like, how on earth could my mom beat me and hurt me at 3 months old?
Yeah.
That realization was just, it really hit me. And I got into therapy again, you know, just trying to sort things out, trying to figure, you know, wrap your head around and comprehend like what was going on with my mom where she would ever think that that was, you know, appropriate. And, you know, skip 10 years down the road, I remember asking her, cause I had become an alcoholic at that point. And I remember asking her, were you drunk? Cause that made sense to me. Mm-hmm. Like I was just trying to comprehend, like, how do you get to a space where you're going to beat the fuck out of us?
Yeah.
And she told me no, but I suspect that's a lie. I suspect that she was a raging alcoholic. My dad says that she was a raging alcoholic, and
most of the shit she says is a lie. So
yeah, it was like from what we've learned just recently.
Yeah, well, yeah. She's full of shit all the time. So
yeah. So not to jump into that, but like we just recently learned that, my mom's husband, so my stepdad, who's been my stepdad for like 22 years, is a pedophile.
Yep.
And that my mom is known, and that my mom, knew that my daughter, my oldest daughter is one of his victims.
Yep.
It was like,
yep, that happened.
This is after disconnecting from her for years. Yeah. And then I go through this huge, profound, like healing journey, found forgiveness, compassion, unconditional love, acceptance, mm-hmm. let her back into our lives, you know, like, and for the last few years, it has been authentic and genuine for me, the yeah. feelings that I have for her and letting her back into our lives.
She's been great.
And it looked like she had changed. Only mm-hmm. to find out that this is just yet another disgusting secret that she's kept.
Yep. Her freaky fuckhead husband is
yeah.
having some guilt problems and decided to pull her daughter off to the side and say, do you remember me doing anything weird?
Inappropriate.
Yeah. And then everything kind of came out on family vacation. It was fun.
Yeah. It's just been, it's just been a maddening situation, but it's been like a horrible family tragedy, just mm-hmm. all of us trying to wrap our heads around the fact that mom's just adopted a persona when we all got a little bit older so that we wouldn't cut her out of our lives, yeah. you know? So yeah. she pretended to be a changed person.
And it's interesting this time because it reverberated throughout the whole family. So
yeah.
all the siblings and their spouses.
Yeah. and to be, and kids and all kids. all the grandkids.
Got to be part of it, and probably nobody's talking to mom again. So.
Well, I won't. I won't. I've learned my lesson more than.
I think everybody's learned their lesson through you, yeah. And so. Yeah. But backing up, so got a divorce, trying to mend things with your mom at that point.
Yeah, I was trying to, well, so I got a divorce. I was in Boulder, Colorado. So I moved back to Utah with my two young kids, enrolled in school, and just realized that to not be a statistic, I needed to do what I needed to do to get an education. So I was going to school full time. I worked as a janitor part time just to make ends meet. And also because it was a job that allowed me to work really early in the morning. Hmm. So I could go to school in the evening. And then I went to school Monday through Thursday. And then I had Friday, Saturday, Sunday off so I could be a mom. So that was really, really important to me.
Yeah.
Yep. And, you know, I would say that during that time period, I was more or less just kind of in survival mode. I didn't really have a lot of time to think about my pain. And it wasn't really creeping up on me, too much. And really when it started to really manifest was about the time that I met you. It had nothing really to do with you other than the fact that by having a team member, you know, support, mm-hmm. I think a lot of the, like my basic needs were instantly taken care of. And I think it gave me an opportunity just to kind of sit in my own poopy diaper.
To borrow our friend's analogy.
Yeah. But at that point too, like I also started to make a lot of money. You gave me an opportunity to shift career and I took it and I started making a lot of money. And that meant that I had access to, alcohol. Mm-hmm. And what turned into what began is like just something that I did once or twice a month, you know, turned into every week. Turned into, you know, a really horrible habit. Mm-hmm. And then I you can call it an addiction, but really it was my favorite coping mechanism.
Yeah.
So I've been sober now 4 years, but, you know, I'm really grateful to alcohol, honestly. Without it, I would have been dead. So, and that's the one thing that has been constant in my life. I first tried to commit suicide when I was 16 years old. And that didn't go well. Mm. And then I've tried with you at least a handful of times since you and I've been together. That's one thing I struggled with big time were suicidal tendencies, man, like this, you know, I would do shitty things when I was, drunk and, I always knew that if anyone ever found out about whatever it was that I did, then I could just pull the plug and kill myself. But I think what led to the majority of the pain though, was just the play rewind of the abuse.
The loop.
And I never forgot, you know, like my siblings, like there's a couple of my siblings, I'm not going to say who, but there's a couple of my siblings that don't remember. They don't remember the severity or one in particular. Mm-hmm. You know, and I didn't ever forget. Not only did I not forget.
You got a good memory.
About what happened to me. I never forgot about what happened to them.
Yeah.
And so like what would happen is for instance, you know, Lexi, let's just say, you know, Lexi would spill her milk on the table. Well, I'm thinking about what my mom did. I'm not even present. You know, I'm cleaning up the mess that Lexi made. But I'm crying and sobbing because I am literally in the past thinking about what my mom did to me, which was, you know, grab me by my hair, levitate me out of my chair, you know, do the ragdoll thing, throw me across the room, you know, kick me, tell me to go get a rag, clean it up.
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
You couldn't screw up in my house without being severely punished. If I spilled anything, if I smirked, if I smiled wrong, if I, you know, I remember one time my mom opening up the shower curtain after I had taken a shower and I'm standing there like naked looking at her and just backhanded me right into, you know, the cultured marble surround, you know, and I'm frantically trying to figure out what did I do, you know, or one time I was dumb enough to grab the curling iron barrel and it was hot. and, you know, came crying to my mom because I had, you know, blisters on my hands and, you know, got a beating over that. You know, I mean, like,
watch. Yeah, that makes sense. I just got hurt. Mom's like, cool, let's kick your ass some more.
Watching her water pick inside my sister's ears with a water pick, you know. I mean, all, and, you know, when you relay these things to her, when we did, and we'd say, well, why did you do, oh, bad medical advice. There was a couple of things.
Bitch, you were married to a doctor.
Yeah. Yeah, where, you know, again, this is detailed, but she object raped me twice a day for like 3 weeks when I was 3-4 years old, you know, because of bad medical advice. I'm like, no, I think you were just nasty. And I think you're just, I just think that's who you are. And now, I mean, like, now that's all being kind of proven right now.
Yeah.
Is it, okay, as children, you just want so badly to have your mom's love. You just want so badly to believe the best. Yeah. But in reality, when you have an evil brain damaged person that's raising you, you know, they have to do something pretty severe to be able.
Gonna have to do a shitload of work too.
Yeah, and you'd have to want to. And I think that's what we've been seeing the last like 3 months is that she's never wanted to.
In my opinion, she would have to do a very powerful psychedelic.
She's just been a con artist.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, the reality of the situation. I think I'm finally to a point where I'm accepting it and I'm trying to let it go.
So basically your entire childhood caused nothing but PTSD that looped in your fucking head daily.
Right.
And got worse anytime one of your children basically
lived life and made their own mistakes
and happened to repeat something that hit close to you.
Right.
Spilling the milk or pee in the bed, whatever.
So I have one of my, unfortunately, the daughter that is one of my stepdad's victims, when she was right before I took plant medicines, this is really what was the final nail in the coffin for me. Is we knew something was wrong. We had been through counseling. We had asked all the right questions, only to find out that my ex-husband's wife, Miriam, that her son, Adrian, had been molesting our daughter for 7 years.
Right.
And I'm not going to share any of those stories because it's not for me to share. But let me tell you.
They're bad.
It's beyond, like, you know, we're just exploring. Let's just put it that way. Mm-hmm. He was 4 years older than her and disgusting. And I've actually just recently, because Kai and I've had so many conversations lately because of Terry that, you know, Kylie's told me more.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so repulsed, and I've almost thought about going back to the police and saying she's remembered more. Let's hold this guy accountable. But anyway, so what happened was that we found out about that. That was like August of 2013. She'd been perpetrated in like 3 different states and 5 different cities. And the way that the juvenile criminal justice system works is that you have to basically open up a case in every city that any of the perpetration happened.
Yeah.
So we had 3 detectives because it got to a point where it's just too much to pursue the other 2. So we pursued 3. And then, of course, like all fathers of children that find out that their daughters are being molested by their kids, he sued me.
Well, he's a very first-rate quality piece of shit. So,
yeah,
not surprising in hindsight.
I don't know
but
if he's
just a piece of shit.
I don't know if he's top shelf piece of shit or if he's lower shelf piece
he's,
of shit.
He's like, I don't know.
Yeah. I'd say he's one of a kind, but like my mom is.
Your mom married another one, so there's more.
Yeah, they're sort of like competing for the top shelf piece of shit, I guess. But anyway, so at that point, like I started drinking heavily and daily, and I didn't even care. You know, I'd never given up. I'd always been a fighter. I'd always been a warrior. I'd always been a defender of the little guy. This was like literally my worst nightmare manifesting. The revelation of what had happened to Kylie, how many number of years it was happening that I didn't know, that that her dad didn't know that this was going on in his house, that he didn't care, and to add insult to injury, then he slapped a civil lawsuit against me for contempt.
Yeah, at a time where we didn't have a lot of money.
Yeah, where we were like, we were making okay money, but we were really just living paycheck to paycheck.
We were climbing out of a hole.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
And so it was like January of, I became aware of plant medicines in November of 2013, where I was in a really bad way. And I think you'd given me kind of an ultimatum, and I don't blame you for that now. But you basically said, you need to stop drinking or I'm going to divorce you. And I knew I needed to stop drinking. I wanted to stop drinking. Shit, if I could have stopped drinking, I would have, because I knew not only was it not serving me, but I was making some really bad, bad choices. Mm-hmm. And I remember sitting in my bed, and I remember you coming in and saying, and putting the laptop on my lap and saying, Cammie, like, just, you know, watch this. Just watch this. I'm like, what is it about? And you're like, just watch it. Just watch it. I'm like, okay. So I click play, and it is this organization called MAPS.org, and it is a YouTube video of the founder of MAPS.org, Rick Doblin, and another gentleman talking about using the synthetic form of psilocybin cubensis, which is MDMA, and how they have an 85% cure rate for men and women coming back from war that are suffering from complex
PTSD,
not post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms, but a complex cases of PTSD.
Yeah.
And I paused it and I looked at you, because at this point I bought into the whole, I'm an alcoholic, and the labeling that I have an addictive personality.
It's in your genes, and you're Irish, right, Scott Irish. So.
Right. It's my genes.
Yep.
And my dad's an alcoholic. So, you know, it's genetic.
Right.
And
odds are.
Yeah. And I said, are you really suggesting that I take a Schedule 1 drug to cure my alcoholism? Like, I almost was looking at you like, okay, Kooka man, like, what on earth are you saying? And you just looked at me and said, just watch the fucking video. And I was like, okay. And I remember it was like 2 hours. And I remember during the 2 hours, I did a lot of crying. I mean, I just cried and cried and cried and cried. And then I came away from that video with two things. One is, I had a complex case of post-traumatic stress disorder, and all of these stupid talk therapists and psychiatrists for 37 years that knew my background, not one of these idiots said, oh, because of the amount of trauma that you sustained as a child.
They must not be trained into diagnosing you with PTSD.
I mean, I literally, in my uneducated mind, thought that PTSD was only for people coming back from war.
Well, because when you finished the video, I asked you, do you think you have PTSD?
I was like, fuck yeah.
I know. I'm like,
yeah, I met every single one of the markers that they listed in that video in a severe, like the crazy spectrum of it.
Yeah.
And then on top of it, also alcoholic and suicidal tendencies. And it was getting really bad. I almost retrained my brain at one point to stop thinking about the trauma and start thinking about how I was really going to kill myself.
Yeah.
And, anyway, so, but when I got done watching that video, I felt hope. Mm-hmm. And then I watched, cause you had found this gentleman and this website from Joe Rogan, one of Joe Rogan's podcasts, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Rick Doblin.
Yeah. Rick Doblin. And so I, was like, well, what other, you know, podcasts does Joe Rogan have about plant medicines? And you introduced me to Amber Lyon. Amber Lyon was pretty big in the psychedelic community in 2014 and 15.
I showed you her before and after,
right?
Which was mind blowing, I thought.
Well, yeah, it was the podcast of her talking about Benghazi.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when they actually approached.
When she got captured and she was a hostage and she basically got tortured.
But that's when Joe Rogan goes on like this kind of tangent about psilocybins.
It was Bahrain, by the
way. Oh, Bayron.
Bayron.
Bayron. Yeah. Oh, yeah. What did I say? Benghazi. Oh, sorry. Sorry. Yeah, no. Yeah, it was, Anyway, and then I saw her before do that interview. And then after she went to ayahuasca.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a noticeable difference, like in her physical appearance, a noticeable difference. And she's a pretty girl, but like, she was like glowy. Like, I don't know. I found myself captivated, and probably because of my ego.
Her eyes. Yeah. Her smile.
At the time, as I was watching Amber Lyon, I thought, well, shit, if she can do it, I can do it. And I'm so grateful to Amber for going on Joe Rogan and being so honest and like authentic and genuine, because it really was, for me, it gave me the courage, like, okay, well, we need to find psilocybin cubensis. And I looked at MAPS.org and their case studies. At the time, they didn't have any case studies for people that didn't have an addiction. So like they didn't want to do any case studies at the time with people like me that had alcoholism. And anyway, so then we sort of forgot about it, or I didn't forget about it, but we couldn't find the truth is that we didn't know any drug dealers. And the people
I knew some, they just didn't have any.
Right. That's what I was going to say. The people that you did finally find,
it takes like 4 months to grow these guys.
Well, and a lot of times they don't sell them because I guess people have quote bad trips. And so they're not really fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I don't think at that point you knew how bad I was. And I was really, really, really good at hiding things. And so I wasn't
starting to realize until like there were times where I was helping you out with your clients, and then I'm like, you're fucking drunk right now.
Yeah. Like
holy shit.
Joel worked a 9-to-5 job before what he did now, or really it was like 7-to-5. Job.
Yeah.
And, I would drive the kids to school and then I'd go to Harmon's, and I would go to the grocery store and I would buy a Diet Pepsi and skim money off the top so that I had cash, get cash back. And then I'd go sit in the liquor store parking lot and
with other people,
with looking around, judging all the other people, like, oh, these alcoholics, you know? And then we'd all, you know, walk in as soon as the liquor store opened at 11 a.m. And I'd buy 2 bottles of wine.
Damn. I should just go sit in the parking lot and hand out mushrooms.
I know. Sorry. Little maps.org cards.
Been here, guys.
Yeah.
Just take this.
Yeah.
Here's 8 grams.
And I'd drink all day. And then I'd be really resentful that I had to go run carpool, pick up kids. And I usually got really angry that I'd have to stop drinking. When we moved out of the house, the one before this one, and I was in full, you know, healing mode.
Yeah.
I mean, the amount of
hidden empty
alcohol.
I was shocked. I was like, what the fuck?
It's like, here's another 6-pack and here's another wine bottle. And,
yeah,
you know, I wasn't really into the hard liquor shit, but let's be real. Like, I'd get drunk and then it was whatever had alcohol I'd drink. So, but anyway, so it was, January of 2014. And, I think I'd never been so low in my life. We won all of our court cases. We held, you know, Kai's perpetrator responsible and accountable, and her dad.
So we tied up all the loose ends, right, so that now we could focus on you. this is in hindsight, not knowing what was happening, but.
Well, because I was dying and needed to die. And that was another thing too, is that now I was aware of these plant medicines, had no idea of how to get them, didn't want to do them in an illegal way. And, I was suffering so badly, and I was so worried to tell you, because you'd given me several ultimatums about the drinking. And I don't blame you now. I was so afraid.
I didn't know any different.
Right. I was so afraid to tell you that I literally convinced myself that it'd be better just to die.
Yeah.
And so I spent, I don't know, like the last part of January and February really thinking about how I could actually do it. And I came up with a really great plan, and I knew exactly how I was going to do it. And at that point, I think I was 100% disassociated from my body, and I started to 100% push away from everybody in my family, literally everybody. And I needed to die. And I think, I don't know if a lot of people understand this that haven't gone through a lot of suffering in their life, this need to die. So then I'm watching this podcast about it's applicable only because of one thing that he says. But I'm watching this podcast with Joe Rogan and this guy named Aubrey, and I thought this guy Aubrey was just crazy, like bonkers. You know, as he's talking about doing the psychedelic called ayahuasca, and you know how the flesh was being ripped off of his body, and he was like turned into a jaguar, and blah 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 blah. But then he starts talking about dying and how that is the proverbial death that you can go through. Like you can actually die, when you take ayahuasca. And that was the only thing that piqued my curiosity. I remember thinking, I will never do ayahuasca. That man is crazy. I don't understand why anybody would ever do that shit. It sounds terrifying. It sounds like trauma, you know?
Yeah.
But I banked it in the back of my head of, there's a possibility, though, that I could die and not have to actually die. That I could just, you know, figuratively die.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, skip to... really the day I was shown grace. I still don't understand what exactly happened that day, but it was March 29th of 2014. I was ready to kill myself. I knew exactly how I was going to do it. I had a really, really good plan in place. It was a Saturday, and I, to get out of the house, because at this point you knew, I think at this point, that there was something really wrong. And so you were sort of kind of keeping tabs on me.
Hovering. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so I knew I could get out of the house if it had something to do with work. And at the time I was at one company, this other company was trying to get me to come over. And I have a really good friend in the business that wanted me to come meet with these gentlemen and basically tell them what I was doing at this other company. And so I left the house with the intention of never coming home again. And I'll never forget too, because you'd just come back from a work trip. And I remember you grabbing me and just telling me, like, how much you loved me and how much you missed me. Mm-hmm. And I was so uncomfortable. Like, how could you even, like, if you even knew, Joel, like, you know, who I am really, like, you wouldn't mm-hmm. be saying that, you know? And I get in my car and I go to back out of the garage, and I'll never forget Lexi, who was 3 at the time. And, you know, just waving, you know, bye, mama, blowing me kisses. And I remember I went out of my way not to wave back or blow her kisses back because I didn't think I deserved it. Mm. That part still hurts.
Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah. That's how much I really hated myself.
Yeah.
And how much I denied myself of love, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I go to this business meeting and I killed it. And I'm like making all these men laugh, and I'm thinking morbid thoughts, you know, what are these men going to think when they realize I left this meeting and I killed myself?
Yeah.
And so we're wrapping things up. I'd had my phone turned over the entire time just as not, so it, you know, not to be interrupted. And I flip over my phone, and you'd sent me a text that said, I found you mushrooms. You can take them tonight. Come home, come home, come home. And I just about lost my shit. And I got my
perfect timing.
You know, I got in my car, and I remember sitting there with my Secret of Suicide in my back pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a choice.
Yep.
And I sat there for a long time, like 15, 20 minutes before I texted you back. And I remember going over the pros and the cons. You know, well, what if this, what if I am the 5%, it doesn't work? You know, what if, meaning that the mushrooms don't work on me. What if, you know, what if I take all 7 grams and I die? That's bonus. You know, like things like that. Like that's what I was going through. Yeah. And really and truly, I just kept on seeing Lexi's face and thinking I owe it to her. She's such a pretty girl. She's such a brilliant little thing. You know, some days, mm-hmm. even now, I look at her and go, how did you land in my house? You're so wonderful, you know? And,
because we needed her.
Yeah. And in a sense, she saved my life that day because just her image
mm-hmm.
kind of gave me the courage to go, okay, yeah, I'm going to try these mushrooms, see what they're all about. Sorry.
No, it's okay.
Yeah. It's just, you know, I look back at that moment in my life and I'm just so grateful.
Not many people can find the pivot point, you know? completely flip their life.
A lot of people commit suicide. Yeah. A lot of people don't have experiences like I had and am shown grace, and I still don't understand, you know, why things happened the way they did. I'm just super, super grateful that they did.
Yeah.
And anyway, so I came home that day, and I, well, first I met this dude in a Shopko parking lot. And yeah, and I got the medicine, and I came home. We didn't know anything, and there was no reset.me. There was no website out there other than like Arrowhead.com, which is, you know, a renowned really drug dealer, or not drug dealer, but drug.
It's just where people that site, yeah, right? It's where people that experiment with all types of things.
Yeah,
plants to, I mean, even heroin and coke.
Yeah, like illicit drugs.
How
hard
to
drugs.
Cook it? How to use it? How to take it? Best right. ways to take it? Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of your what? It's your Wikipedia for
drugs.
Drugs.
Yeah. And so we tried to figure out how I was
best
supposed
way
to take
them. That, you know, because everything I'd heard was they taste like shit.
Right.
Because they grow in shit sometimes. Yeah. I remember we're on Arrowhead, and basically at the end of the day, it was like, look, you need to put it in some sort of citric acid from, you know, basically citrus juice.
Yeah. So we ground them and we put them in lemon juice, and we let them sit for 30 minutes.
Yep.
And we did 5 grams. That's how much I had done. I cleaned up my room. You were going to be my sitter, you know.
Yep.
I had come across Set and Setting, so I knew, you know, a little bit about what that was. I think Amber Lyon had talked about that as well.
Yep, we put on the Apple TV screensaver, which was just nothing but beautiful animals and landscapes.
Right, and
somehow I ended up with a fucking basil plant in our room.
I grabbed it because I had heard that
you could see him breathe.
You could see him breathe.
Yep.
And it was...
I didn't know you grabbed it.
Yeah, it was March. Yeah. And it was March, and it was still really cold outside, so there was really no like real vegetation going on outside.
Yeah.
And so I got into bed and I basically down the hatch 5 grams. And then I just sat there, and we watched The Cosmos too. Do you remember that show? Neil deGrasse Tyson, yeah.
While the mushrooms were taken on?
Yeah. We watched that first. We watched an episode of that first, and then it was just the screensaver. And half hour went by, nothing, an hour, nothing, hour and a half, nothing. About 2 hours, I started getting really agitated. And when I say nothing, let me be clear. Like, I knew that I could feel them in my brain, in my heart, and in my guts. But, like, they weren't connecting, or like at the time I didn't have any frame of reference for what this was going to be like. Some people said that you'd have heightened awareness, or that you'd see pretty colors, or that type of thing. And for me personally, nothing was really happening other than I knew that I was being assessed.
Yeah.
And then I started getting agitated. I think I'm not 5%. These aren't going to work for me. And then in my private mind, it was, I should have killed myself earlier today. What was I thinking? I should have known I wasn't a good enough person for these to work on me. You know, this is just my luck. All this kind of like victimization, blah, blah, blah. And you said, well, you didn't even say. You just started to grind up.
Put them in the cup.
Yep. And soak them. And 2 more grams down the hatch. So now I've taken 7 grams of mushrooms.
Yeah, because if I remember right, they were like 5 to 7 grams. And you wanted to start on the short side.
Yeah, I think I was like, well...
Well, you're probably nervous. I wouldn't imagine you wouldn't have been.
Yeah. Well, I'd been raised to be afraid of all these things.
Yeah.
So, and I had never ever taken drugs before. So in my mind, this was a drug, and you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so, I don't know, maybe 20 minutes later, the knobs on the dresser that the TV was sitting on became kind of metallic. And I noticed the basil plant started to breathe. It was like illuminating. And I walked up to it to look at it because it was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. I could see the chlorophyll in its tiny little leaves and almost like the little aura around it, you know? And it was just beautiful. And I remember getting emotional. And then I remember sitting down in the chair, and the knobs really went metallic. And that's when the psilocybins connected. And the way that they connected into me was through love.
Mm-hmm.
I literally felt like every ounce of my being, every pore, every cell was being infused with a ridiculous amount of love. And I sat there and just cried. I cried. I face rained, really. I mean, I couldn't help it. Like, the tears that were rolling down my face were just, you know, it was such a relief to have that kind of release. Mm-hmm. And I remember you looking at me and going, "Are you okay?" And I was, "Hey, I'm fine. And then this is the difficult thing when you talk about plant medicines, because they connect with everybody different. Some people, it's more paint by numbers and visions. For some people, it's, you know, feelings and impressions. Other people, you think that you hear things or that it's a conversation. For me, it was more dialogue. So the psilocybin said, "Well, this isn't just any love. This is the love that your family feels from you, and we've just redirected it mm-hmm. to your heart." And I lost my shit.
Now, I remember you're like, "They said..."
And I looked at you and I said, "I told you that." And then I was like, "Well, now I understand why you haven't left me if this is how you feel from me." Mm-hmm. I had no idea I could be so beaten down and have the ability to make people feel loved like that. That was a revelation for me. And what was really important is that it immediately had me, I slammed right back into my body. I had been so disassociated my entire life. That connection, it was like this interesting bridge for me, and I was able to come right back into my body. Yeah. And really make, you know, not that I didn't ever have any, you know, suicidal thoughts after I took psilocybin, but it really helped me to to be more present and to be in my body. There were several consciousnesses that were speaking to me. So the mushrooms were very funny and almost like little gnomes, like garden gnomes. And at one point, you know, flashed a picture of my head of like this mushroom inside of my head, inside of my brain with all these extension cords, you know, like, "Well, that doesn't belong there. This belongs here. You know, like, what's this doing here?" And like chucked it out. And I later realized that in my frame of reference, my understanding of the body, which, you know, I actually majored in the sciences, so I had a pretty good understanding of, you know, like, you know, neurons and neuroconnected pathways and things like that. But they were really showing me that my brain hadn't developed right. They showed me how they were lengthening my synapses and rejuvenating them and letting them discharge into my receptors. They literally taught me that when we have trauma, that we have these trauma cycles that we complete, and that my trauma cycles weren't able to complete. That's what PTSD is. Because the synapse is bent and it just keeps on feedback loop, this play, rewind, mm-hmm. you know, this other consciousness that was there, which I believe to be the earth, you know, it was almost like she grabbed my hand and would stroke my hand and tell me how sorry she was plain as day told me, "That's not your mother. I'm your mother. And I'm going to take care of you now." And to set this record straight, she has. Mm-hmm. There has been a significant force in our lives since March 29th of 2014, undeniably so.
Yeah, it's been awesome.
We've not wanted for anything. And even though we've been through some pretty severe traumatic events just recently, mm-hmm. you know, over my mom again, you know, I still feel that warmth, that care, that love.
Yeah.
You know, that we're being protected, that we're being... watched over and cared for, you know?
Yeah.
Let's see, other insights that I got from my plant medicine experience. At one point you decided to go get a snack mm-hmm. and it was like tortilla casserole and it had like, you know, cheese and beans and meat and things. And I remember looking at that going, "Oh, we should not be eating that." But that was it. As far as food was concerned, it was like, that's, you know, I was like, "Oh God, that looks disgusting."
I think you looked in the mirror and you saw a monkey.
Yep. I felt very,
primal or something.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I really did. I looked at myself. I didn't like that. I was like, "I'm not doing that again. That didn't look very good." They showed me the interconnected, kind of like interwebs with the plants and the fungi that works within the root system. And just recently, you know, we watched the, what is it called again?
Fantastic Fungi. Yep.
And there's a part in Paul Stamets' movie where he, you know, shows this in detail. And I found myself weeping as I'm watching this because I'm like, that's what I saw. Mm-hmm. That's what they showed me inside of my mind's eye. I saw, you know, this interconnective, yeah. you know, kind of like internet that's under the ground through the mycelium.
Yeah.
Of course, I didn't know at the time those words. I just know that that's what it.
It's always fun to see something back, you know, yeah. and you're like in hindsight, you're like, oh my God, I got that impression from
yeah.
you know, a plant.
It was just a very loving, it was so loving and it was like validating. I had so much validation and,
yeah.
and, you know, they, at one point they said that it took us some time, they said that it took us some time to assess you because we had to reach out to other plants. That's when they showed me this interconnective highway underneath the plant, underneath the ground. And then the little gnome mushroom guy said to me, you have to go see the Lord of the plants. And he said it just like that, the Lord of the plants, you know, like, yeah, exactly. Like, and I knew exactly what that meant. I knew that meant ayahuasca. Yep. And,
yeah.
And as quick as they had connected, they disconnected. And you say it was about 5 hours,
mm-hmm.
even though it felt like not even 5 hours to me. And I remember sitting there going, what in the fuck just happened?
Mm-hmm. Me too, because I had no idea.
Yep.
And I saw you do, I mean, I saw you cry and
yeah.
you, now that I know how to take mushrooms, when you would come out, you'd give me a brief synopsis and then go back in, you know,
right.
which is common.
Pretty common.
Sorry, I'm trying to reach my face.
It's 'cause your sore arm.
So body's so sore. Anyway.
Anyways, I went to sleep, woke up the next morning and, it was like 30 years of therapy in about 5 hours. I had so many results and side effects. I really couldn't keep up with them for about the first week. First of all, I had no desire to drink, which was crazy.
No withdrawals.
And no withdrawals. They really kept me numb. I would say for a week I was numb. I got up, I made my coffee, which I'd make with like, you know, powdered creamer, the carnation creamer, and then Splenda. And I couldn't drink it. I took one sip. And it was nasty. And I was like, what the hell have I done to the coffee? So I like made new coffee and made it again. And I'm like, this is nasty. And went to go grab a Diet Pepsi, took one sip of the Diet Pepsi and I couldn't drink it. I was like, and I was a habitual Pepsi drinker, like 2 liters a day.
Pepsi stock went down that day. They're like, oh no.
Come on now. But realistically, I was drinking at least 2 liters a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I always had a Diet Pepsi can in my hand.
There were empty cans around our house everywhere.
Yep. Yep. And so I, let's see. So that was kind of a weird, bizarre thing. But the biggest thing for me was the space. I felt like I could open my eyes. I didn't feel like I was like scrunching my face and crinkling my eyebrows all the time. I had this room in my head, like elbow room, like, you know, it was almost mm-hmm. as if something had, like I had, someone had just given me extra RAM.
Yeah. Well, from everyone who lives with you's perspective, like we could see it the way we could see Amber Lyon when she did her second podcast. You're like, holy shit.
Yeah. Well, immediate
this glow people get.
Yeah. And of course we didn't tell the kids and we didn't tell any extended family.
No.
And, but the kids almost like within a week were looking at me like, what happened? Because, because another side effect, and I've heard that this is a side effect for other people. I haven't actually met anyone personally, only have heard of other people, you know, that for me, I couldn't eat any meat or really any chemicals after taking psilocybins. So I went from being like, you know, we had two smokers and a barbecuer and meat for every single breakfast and snack to that day we went and had Mexican food. And I had some meat and cheese in a chimichanga, and I couldn't eat it. It made me sick.
And for anybody listening, do not use that as a reason not to if you're feeling the calling, because it does not happen to everybody.
No, but for me, but you have to understand, I was 230 pounds, so I was morbidly obese. I'm only 5'6".
I was about 300 pounds, too.
Yeah, I mean, I was drinking...
That's fat.
I was drinking... you know, 2 liters of Diet Pepsi a day, who knows how much alcohol a day. Mm-hmm. I was probably as acidic as you could be. And, you know, whole food plant-based diet's very anti-inflammatory. So when I think about it from a scientific perspective and hindsight, that was probably the very best thing for me to get me on the path to healing that I needed. I think I'd already had, had to have, a hysterectomy because I was like a click away from cervical cancer. You know, like I had all these things that were starting to manifest on my body, not to mention the Accutane, the sodium amytal that my parents forced me to take. Not to mention being in fight or flight my entire life. I was a click away from some sort of neurological issue too. I'm almost a positive that if I hadn't shifted things, I'd probably have like MS or something really devastating right now that I'd be working, suffering from. So, you know, it kind of makes sense in hindsight. And really I just choose to eat that way. We tried to go back to being like pescatarian. And the truth of the matter is that that's just not for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. At the end of the day, I'm happy. I love eating a whole food plant-based diet. So, and then I lost 80 pounds in like 3.5 months. I really didn't have any cravings for alcohol until I relapsed one day. And I think it was in July. And it was the universe's way of forcing me to find an ayahuasca center. And I found a place within like a week, sent in an application, got accepted, sent in my deposit for October.
Yep. And said, hey, I'm going.
But
you're welcome to come too.
Yeah, I totally did. And you were looking at me like, what? And I'm what? Like, no, yeah, we're going. Like, I'm going. Are you coming with me? And he's you said to me, you're like, would you really go without me? And I was like, yeah. Yeah, like
okay,
I had this like urge at this point that, you know, it was almost like the urge to pee where you can only hold it for so long and then you have to pee. Mm-hmm. It was kind of that same thing. It was like this urge that I had to go. And for me and a lot of people, like I've told the story to a couple of people and it's funny how some people are like, well, you didn't have to go all the way to Peru. It's like, yeah, I know that. But like I wanted to go to Peru. I had the means to go to Peru. And this specific place, just felt like the right place.
If you have the money to go to one of these sanctuaries,
go
because it gives you the time and the space and the privacy, and that you're in the middle of the friggin' jungle with nature.
Well, listen, and ayahuasca is the hardest work I've ever done in my life.
Yeah,
what a better place to do it than in the jungle. And I might add too,
no distractions.
Yeah. Ayahuasca is to be done in at least 3 cups of ayahuasca in 3 different days. Mm-hmm. Anybody choosing to do ayahuasca one day, that's to the shamanic community, that is malpractice.
Yeah. It's like you opened up a book, read a third of it and feel like you know the whole book. You don't.
Well, and really and truly that's where psychosis can, settle in.
Finish.
Yeah, there's a reason why 3 cups are really mandatory. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we should just do a whole podcast one time about the safeties of ayahuasca, and you know what to look for in an ayahuasca center, mm-hmm. you know that type of thing, because we do get asked that question a lot.
How to prepare and how important it is to prepare the right way.
Right.
You know, I mean, I remember the last time I went. You know, they give you. They give you a list of foods not to eat.
Yeah.
And there are people who are like, nah, I'm pretty sure that's just a suggestion. And, you know, some of them had very bad experiences. Some of them had no experiences.
Yeah.
You know, all I can tell you is they're asking you to prepare a certain way for a reason.
Whatever
follow
you,
their advice.
Whatever you put into it, you're going to get back. Yeah. This is just Newton's law of motion. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And I think that because humans have been taught that they're the top of the food chain, you know, which is not true. Not when you really expand consciousness and you really see things for what they are. You know, this idea that somehow you're better than a plant, you know, more than a plant. Like you guys, you just have no fucking idea. Like, that's so not true. Americans kind of
do it a lot. We go to the next level too, you know, America.
Yeah. Plus, I have to say that was one of the best things that we picked this place in Iquitos, Peru.
Yeah.
And one of the coolest things about this place was that, 30 other people showed up from every other continent that there is in the world.
Yeah. You know? We had everybody there.
And it was so cool to see. Well, it's really, a great place to go get mocked if you're an American from North America by other people from other countries.
Well, doing it as a retreat where you're gone for, if you're doing ayahuasca alone, you're going to be gone for 8 days. You're with 30 people that for 8 days become family.
Yeah, it's funny how when you sit in the Maloka and everyone's sort of like, you kind of have this, your ego mask on, everyone's like, hi, I'm so-and-so, and this is what I do for a living, this is how I make money,
Yeah.
And then it's like, you do your first cup of ayahuasca, and there's something very bonding about hearing people purge.
Yeah.
And shit. And cry. And you come out of that the next day, everybody's like best friends. It's the weirdest thing. You just feel bonded to everybody.
You went to war together.
Yeah, you really did. And it's like summer camp for adults.
But taking extremely healing,
Yeah, and it really is a healing, just a ridiculously healing place and space. And, after every cup, there's a talking circle.
Yeah.
Usually the next day. And just hearing, people's ahas and the results or...
Yeah.
Learning more about everybody's pain and why people are there.
Yeah.
And that was an important thing for.
Well, and I think a lot of times adults crave, support from other adults, but there's really no other place that we sit there and purge all our bullshit.
Right.
Whether it's secrets or we're the perpetrator or we're the victim or whatever.
Right.
And so you have everybody in this place that no judgment because everybody's there to do something.
Well, you don't really typically have the time and the space to be able to just relax and go inward.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not constantly being distracted by, the to-do list or work or phone calls or emails or...
No, I mean, this particular place we went to, it's all inclusive. So your meals are all prepared for you. Essentially, your job is throughout the day to relax. And be in a hammock and read or just think or stare at the river or
talk to other people.
Yeah. And you're basically preparing for that evening. When the ceremony starts at 9, there's a couple of times you gather and kind of you're prepped on what to expect and what to do. There's some ceremonies about actually preparing the ayahuasca, but for the most part, you spend a lot of time in your own energy, just kind of like, especially after a ceremony, just trying to compute what just happened.
Yeah. And so where I was at right before we went to ayahuasca in October 2014 was I still was having a really hard time wrapping my head around the relief that I had felt from the psilocybins. I still had no idea really what had happened. I was looking for some answers, but it had given me an opportunity to realize that there was, that I could actually really heal, my trauma, that this actually could give me some consistency. So anyone that's ever gone through something traumatic before, sometimes you think that you are healed from it and you think, oh no, I'm fine. I'm totally fine. As long as you don't rock the boat, meaning that as long as you don't then, get married and have like a child, like usually then the trauma will remanifest. Like you're looking at it from a different perspective. As you grow, the trauma grows. And I was exhausted from that process, which is actually why I started to drink was at some point, I think I realized that, it was never going to go away and it was just getting worse and worse as the years went on. And so I just learned how to cope by medicating myself with alcohol.
Yeah.
So, but I was ready to see whatever I needed to see after having such great success with the psilocybins. And I think I would fall in the same statistic of 85% of my pain gone. I really wanted to understand the rest of my pain and really figure out what I needed to do to heal my trauma once and for all. So that's pretty much my...
So it's your psilocybin experience.
Yeah, and my kind of my story of...
How you got here. Well, we might want to cut this podcast off.
Right.
And do a whole nother episode about...
Ayahuasca.
Ayahuasca. Picking the sanctuary and what it was like to prepare.
Yeah.
And what happened once you got there. And then probably what happened once you got home. Because, like, we've learned that... What did our shaman say? Yeah,
1% of the medicine is in the cup.
We worked with an amazing shaman who was very quotable.
Hold on. The other 99% of the medicine is in integration.
Yeah.
And look, don't take a plant medicine if you don't know what integration is and you don't have integration support. Because that's one thing I think with the sanctuary that we went to that was incredibly lacking. Was mm-hmm. there was no integration support. There was no talk about integration support the first time. You know, I've been back to this place 3 times now. And the other 2 times that was talked about, but the first time it wasn't talked about. Mm-hmm. It was almost like and we've kind of talked about this after taking peyote in Arizona this last year, was there's this, the older generation... seemed to almost have had this like weird, I don't know, philosophy that there's like a rite of passage. So you must be terrified, or it must be certain things must be done in a terrifying setting, like these types of psychedelics.
You got to earn your healing.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the trauma I've gone through in my life wasn't enough to earn the right to work with these.
Trying to do work with the plants because of my childhood.
So it felt like to other people too, once we got done taking ayahuasca, we were just sort of shoved off into the deep end to flounder around and hopefully
it's
not
like, it's like being dropped off on another planet.
Right.
Have fun with that, you know, or even a different country where you don't speak the language, you don't know the customs. And
right.
Yeah. It's very bizarre.
And now things are way different at this sanctuary, but at other sanctuaries, it's very focused on integration. They understand that you can't shift and change how you can shift and change with plant medicines in a very small amount of time and then go back to normal life and think that everything's going to be peachy. And mm-hmm. I think that was something that I believed was going to happen, because I had considerable relief after working with ayahuasca.
Psilocybin?
No, with ayahuasca. And when we got home, when we got, well, and I did with psilocybins too, but then when we got home, it wasn't peachy.
No.
Everything wasn't magically fixed.
No, it was a fucking train wreck.
Yeah, so we should talk about that too. But I think it would be great, the next podcast is for you to tell, you know, your story about your childhood and things up until ayahuasca.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I'm totally down with that. So,
well, thanks for letting me talk this entire episode.
You know what? I like hearing the story every time. So,
yeah, it's still cathartic.
Sometimes it's good to remember where you came from, mm-hmm. so you can really appreciate where you're at.
Word.
And when you go over the history of it, it's like, because even like, you know, dealing with some dense shit right now, it's like, yeah, but this is still a better day than it was, you know, six years ago.
I think one of the biggest results I had from psilocybins was the instantaneous relief.
Yeah.
And this perspective of everything's going to be okay, you know, and just hope, you know, that the hope was real hope. It wasn't hopium. It was, you know, real hope and understanding that there was something much greater than myself. At the time I was an atheist, or I thought I was. And, you know, I'd been raised super religious, kind of cult environment to family or religion, and then went to the opposite spectrum and was more, you know, agnostic, really. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, had this experience, and it was just so outside of any frame of reference or anything that I'd ever read or anything. And, you know, and I was a reader, like I was reading like, you know, 2-3 books a week. Mm-hmm. I mean, I never, not even in, you know, in a fantasy you know, world, did plant medicines ever really come up? Psychedelics really come up? I mean, so it was just so outside of anything that I had ever really, you know, ever thought about. And to have, you know, really what it did is it started putting me on this path of question everything, experience everything. The people that say that they know, they don't know. They only know what the person told them that told them that told them that told them, but who's fact checking the very beginning, you know? And does that person know who they really are, you know?
Yeah.
Does that person know they're a multidimensional being? Because if they don't know, then they probably don't know a lot. They don't know what even what they say that they're educated and an expert in. And it sort of led me to be super curious about myself and follow those curiosities, which I still do today. It's so much fun. So much fun. But all right. Well,
it's a good place to end.
Yep.
Yeah.
But anybody listening to this that is suffering, you don't have to suffer.
No.
Nope. There's when your pain is done working for you, and that is the reality of pain and suffering. Whenever someone's in pain and then they give excuses, I always think to myself, well, they're not done being in pain.
Mm-hmm.
They still need to suffer. They still feel like they deserve to suffer. Or that suffering is working for them and they're afraid to let go of the suffering because that might change and shift things where now they have to have accountability. I know a little bit about that too.
Well, if these plants ping with you, you'll find them.
Oh yeah. They find you. They found me. They really did.
You'll just have conversations with people. You'd be surprised.
Yeah.
A lot of people have said, I don't care what these weird politicians tell me is legal and not legal. I'm going to put myself first.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not, it's not, and they're not scary drug dealers selling these. It's probably your neighbor growing them in his bedroom, to be honest with you. So yeah. You just don't know. So,
but with the legalization and decriminalization of a lot of these plants, there's really no reason you don't have
to. There's places you can go. If you want to go get them, you can go to Oakland, you can go to Colorado.
My point is you don't have to do them illegally. There's really no reason to put yourself at risk like that.
You can sign up for something at Johns Hopkins or just go to maps.org. I mean, I think their trials are for people that are desperate.
Well, and there's other different types of psychedelic therapies that are available, like ketamine.
Yeah, ketamine is legal. And I haven't taken it yet, but from what I understand, it's very similar.
Yeah, for me personally, I like plant materials. So I tend to go to the places where that's... Yeah. But there's a lot of people that have had good success off of MDMA, which is the synthetic form of psilocybin cubensis, ketamine, DMT.
Yeah.
So it really kind of depends on who you are and your experiences and your perspective and what you need for you. There's a lot of people that will judge other people for what they choose to do. And I'm to a place in my life where it's like, you do you.
Yeah.
You know, we're all unique that way in that nobody looks through your eyes but you, and nobody has the neuroconnective pathways that you do. You're very unique and special in your point of view and your perspective. And so your path, the way that you do things, how you heal, is going to be very different than how I do it or how you, Joel, do it or anybody else. That's why I get so irritated sometimes, tangent, but irritated with these see me beamies that will say, today we're going to talk about spirit guides and all that you need to know about your spirit guide. You know, today we're going to talk about, you know, forgiveness or compassion or unconditional. And it's like, or life coaches. That's my favorite, the life coaches. Cause it's like,
be your own life coach.
Yeah. That's the only way that's the only way it works.
Mm-hmm.
You can do exactly what Eckhart Tolle did or Adi Ashanti or Oprah or Deepak Chopra. Like I can continue to go down, or Jesus, you know, you can do it exactly and follow all the wisdom and do it exactly how they did it. And it's not going to work for you.
Yeah. You got to find your own path.
Yeah.
Take charge.
Yeah.
So, well,
all right. Well, on that note.
Okay. Thank you. If you got any questions, post some comments.
Yeah. Like, subscribe, as Lexi would say.
Yep. Do all that stuff. Anyways, we would love to have conversations with anybody that's curious.
Yeah, absolutely. And have a great day.
Thanks. Bye.